It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast.
I'm your host, Chris Beasley, joined by my colleague, Everton correspondent, Joe Thomas, and our regular guest, Gavin Buckland, to reflect on what was a momentous week at Goodison Park with a hat-trick of victories that put Everton across the line and secured Premier League safety for another season. Just as I was letting Gavin to Echo Towers a few months ago, he commented on my ID card here at the Echo. It's actually... from 2010, he said, "This is an old picture of you there, Chris." That was just after Everton's previous Goodison derby win, so you know, a sign of how long we've come before that one was exercised. But another win, Joe, on Saturday evening, and the Blues are over the line now.
Yeah, they are, and it's a relief. And I'm probably still in a little bit of shock, to be honest, because you know, 10 days ago, well, not even 10 days, 8 days ago, we'd have been waking up ahead of the game against Forest. And, yeah, I didn't think it was going to quite develop that week. I mean, no. It was a fortnight ago today that they were at Chelsea, and I just think about how grim things looked after that. And, like, It's astonishing how things can change in such a short period of time. But that's it. The relegation fight is over, and it's over, not even pending appeals and things like that, as the Premier League would have you believe in the build-up to the...
Wow.
To the game on Saturday. It's well and truly done and dusted, and all of a sudden they can start looking forward to... next season or the end of this season, and wondering whether Deitch will, you know, use this as an opportunity to play some squad players or some youth players, and also kind of, well, looking nervously at the Championship and wondering whether both Ipswich and Norwich will come up, because there'll be some long old journeys added to the Premier League next season if that's the case. But what a lovely place to be. This is my third season, and it's the first time that, like, I'll go towards... I won't be in the final week of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, writing about relegation battles. So, like, I'm in uncharted territory here.
Yeah. Talking about uncharted territory, that was a magnificent stat from yourself, Gav. I don't know. About the fact that it was the first time Everton won three
home league games
in a week since April 1904.
Sorry, yeah.
120 years ago.
To be fair, we don't offer three home games in a week, home league games in a week. It last happened in 1965, when we played three home league games in the April again, and one of them was home win over Liverpool. In 1904, when we won three home league games and win, one of them was home win over Liverpool.
Yeah,
and of course, it's good to see the that has carried on. So what he said, actually, that should be part of, like, the first season. Probably, we'll make sure we've got three home league games in a week, one of which is against Liverpool. Yeah, and I can only say, you know, I was budgeting for 4 points.
Yeah.
You know, I think the conversations we had, you know, before the Forest game, we thought 4 points would be a decent return here. And we got nine, including a derby win. So, it's just, I think, best week we've had, needless to say, for many, many years, I would think. Probably going back to the Moyes era, in terms of the general feeling of well-being and achievement, if you could call it that, from the management and players.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, obviously the euphoria after the derby result, and we've gone through that, the fact that not just beating Liverpool, but so emphatically, so comfortably. So, you know, it was always going to be a case of after the Lord Mercer show to a certain degree against Brentford, but then very different type of game. But Everton sort of looked controlling what was a tight game.
it definitely felt like a game, if not a pre-season game, it felt like a game where both sides were going through the motions, weren't it? I think, we had the wonderful start again, and, you know, the 1878s were brilliant with their effort, and the, you know, Gladys Street looked fantastic, and the players got the welcome. But I think that whilst I can understand why everybody was so keen to stress the job hadn't been done at that point, I think we all knew really it had been done, especially when Luton went and lost at Wolves in the early kickoff. It just removed all the pressure then. Yeah. And it just felt like that. It felt like a game between two, you know, mid-table sides that were just going through the motions. I think, you know, for the first time this season, possibly, now, I mean, for those of you who don't know, if you're in the press box, trying to get hold of a toilet at half-time is practically impossible. Like, yeah, if you go into the queues, into the stands, it's a nightmare. So what I tend to do if I need the toilet at half-time is I go all the way back down to the ground floor and to the ones outside the media room. But normally I'm so busy at that point that I just can't do it. So, okay, like, you know, I'll type up my notes at half-time. The very least of what I'll normally do is type up my summary of the first half, so that I've got my bedrock to build whatever the top lines are, depending on the result. Well, I mean, if I'm being perfectly honest, I didn't really have anything to write at half-time. Yeah. You know, I mean, the conversation in some parts of the press box certainly was on the football, was it, by the end of it? I think myself and Tony Scott were having a few... I can't remember what we were talking about.
I don't know. I was ignoring you both.
Yeah, that's it. But it didn't feel like that. I mean, but it was so enjoyable just to be like that. Like, Tony Scott had the jelly babies, and I had the Colin the Caterpillar cake. And, you know, and this is it. But
this pod has gone down some unexpected way.
I know it has.
I never got a sniff of the Colin the Caterpillar.
No chance. But I can't tell you, it was just such a pleasant experience to be able to sit there and actually not think that every second of that match was just, you know, played under crushing pressure.
Yeah.
And it was nice, you know, and obviously there was a lack of entertainment on the pitch in that first half.
Thomas Brad called it boring, didn't he? Yeah.
Well, he was right, wasn't it? But again, it was nice that it was right. It was nice to be in that position. I think I wrote that it was a first half of blocked shots and defenders glancing back long balls to their own goalkeepers, and that was pretty much it, wasn't it? I think Tarkowski made a good block from someone. I think it might have been Tony or Jensen, already left my mind. And Everton had a few good opportunities as well that led to brave blocks, but that was it for the first half, really, wasn't it? In the second half, I must admit, by about 55 minutes, I'd started writing my match report based on Everton winning.
Yeah.
It was 0-0. That's not necessarily because I thought they were going to win, but I was just thinking, I haven't got a clue what I do if this game finishes a draw, because it would have been 9 points and a better goal difference, but it wouldn't have been able to go, oh, they're safe.
Yeah.
So you're just there, I wrote in the thing before, they'd have gone from 98% survival to 99% survival, and you're just there struggling for a hook.
Yeah, Romelu Lukaku wanted a contract. It was 99.9999% signed, and he didn't get signed.
So I started writing on the basis that Everton won, and then because it was just the easiest thing to do, and then I had it as a backup. So when Idrissa Gueye put that goal, put the ball in the back, and I was overjoyed.
Yeah,
and Everton saw it out really well after that. Really, I think a few nerves at the end, but hit the crossbar twice, and they committed to put that one just wide. It was, you know, it was just a very pleasant experience, and I'm not used to it.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Great that they were in that position. You budgeted for 4 points, you said, from that block of three games. Wasn't it nice that they were able to do that after the Derby heroics?
Yeah, you didn't want to get beat on Saturday. That was out of the... No. You know, I would have taken a board, a 0-0 draw, to be fair. You just didn't want to get beat. For me, it had the feel of, when you have like a 12:30 kickoff on New Year's Day, when you've been on the table the night before, and it's all a bit flat, isn't it, and stuff. And it had that sort of feel to it on and off the pitch, didn't it? And that was inevitable, really, wasn't it? Because it was always going to be that old hackneyed phrase after the Lord Mayor's show a little bit, wasn't it, on Saturday after the derby. And all this great stuff we spoke about on Friday, it was always going to be something that was going to, you know, be rebound off the back of that. But, and this is the sign of a decent team and a manager who's, you know, working well at the moment, we found a way to win, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, amidst all that, like, pretty dire play, we found a way to win. So, tell you what, best thing the first half, and I thought we'd probably talk about Timothy, that the clip pass by Timothy over the head over to Zakore, volleyed wide, is that was a really good bit of skill, that. I mean, that to do that, you know, you need to be, you know, you need to have something, you know, a bit of talent. And that was a really good, for a 19-year-old to show that one skill, I think that was excellent. And that was about the highlight for me. And the McNeil shot that went wide, wasn't it, across the 6-yard box. But we found a way to win, and that's it. And ultimately, that's made it 9 points out of 9 points. 1-0. Second to last week game on Match of the Day is always a good place to be when you're in our position. Really. And that's what we got. That's what the game deserved. But that was, and we deserved 3 points as well.
Yeah, well, we'll come on to match winner in just a game. But Gav's brought him up there. Yusuf Chimiti is his first Premier League start, Joe. He's had lots of cameos off the bench over his short. I think he had 20-odd minutes against Wolves back in August. But after that, they've all been 10 minutes or less. So big opportunity for him. And a lot of people do seem to have been impressed with what they saw from him in parts.
Yeah. I mean, he tried hard, which, you know, obviously you want to see, you think is a prerequisite, but it isn't always the case. I think it was pretty clear that he was going to have a very difficult task from the beginning. Obviously, we know this is a team that likes to play long and direct, and you know, Chimiti doesn't have the kind of the strength or perhaps the physical strength or the savviness to do, say, what Dominic Calvert-Lewin does so well and constantly position his body in between the defender and the ball and win the headers and the flick-ons and things like that. But I think that he kind of, you know, one, that's expected. You know, he's very inexperienced at Premier League level, and two, he's very young. Mm-hmm. But I thought he still tried hard. You know, he had a difficult task against Ayer and Pinnock, both big lads, but he did what he could to kind of keep them under pressure and won a few kind of set, you know, throw-ins and by chasing lost causes and things like that, and that helped. I didn't think he, you know, had that much of an impact on the game, but I was actually, you know, Gav alluded to it there, I was actually quite impressed by the little glimpses that we did see.
Yeah.
We know he'll grow into himself, you know, both, you know, psychologically and physically as he kind of gets more used to the Premier League. But what I was quite pleased about was I thought there was evidence of a footballing brain. Which isn't, you know, you think would be a given in footballers, but I'm not sure it constantly
is.
You
know, my experience.
Some very effective Premier League players, including some at Everton, probably still get by on what they bring to the game physically rather than in terms of, you know, intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Chimiti has the build to suggest that he could eventually have a role to play physically, but things like that little flick to Corey for the goal, it was just a little touch of class that just suggested that he could read a game and he could find a way to feed players in. That's really promising. And then I liked, look, he should have scored in the second half.
Should have put
the game beyond doubt. But I like the fact that he got into the position in the first place. I like the fact that once he kind of got the ball in the edge of the area, he managed to make sure he got into a position where he had a good chance to shoot. Because it did look a little bit clumsy at first, but there were defenders around him. He was able to kind of create the opportunity for himself. And I liked that he went for the dink finish.
Yeah, something different.
You know, I liked that he went, it might be audacious, it might be cheeky, and it didn't work. And, you know, there are other times where you say, why didn't you just blast it? But, like, it just, again, showed that, I thought it showed that his thought process was very quick. He was thinking about what he was doing. Keeper had gone down. When you look at how the keeper went down, how Flecken went down, chipping him was probably the most effective way to goal. He just got the angles wrong. And when you say, for instance, you look at the derby a couple of days earlier, and, you know, the Liverpool has some fantastic players, but, you know, Darwin Núñez is a player who scores a lot of goals, is a very good player, but he's someone who gets his head down and just hammers the ball. And you think quite a lot of time it would serve him better to have a little bit more thought about what he does with his shots and what he tries to do. And I like that Yusuf Chimiti, despite on the biggest stage of his career so far and the biggest opportunity he's had at Everton so far, felt comfortable enough to be able to think about what he was doing, mm-hmm. even when he only had a split second to think about it. Yeah. And I think that bodes well. I still think that he's a bit of a confusing signing in the rounds when you look at kind of where Everton were last summer, what they needed and what they were going to commit to spend to and things like that. But, you know, if he can carry on developing, would he be an answer for next season? Possibly not. But I think that, you know, Dominic, you know, this is probably a conversation for pods down the line. We've got the rest of the season, but I think there's a big question mark over whether or not Dominic Calvert-Lewin will still be at the club next season. He'll enter the last 12 months of his contract. Yeah, there are clubs that want him and are interested in him. Mm. There always have been whenever he's been fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it may well be that the club and the player have a decision to make over the course of this summer. Now, would Chimiti come in as a direct replacement for Calvert-Lewin? You would hope not. You'd think that somebody else would need to do it. But could he form part of a more varied and more able and, if not diverse, because obviously there are a lot of players with very similar profiles there, or there are, you know, Calvert-Lewin, Beto and Chimiti, and not the same if Calvert-Lewin to go, but, you know, could he form part of a better attack next season with more players you can rely on? Well, yeah, quite possibly. I thought there was enough in there to show that he could, so good. Like, I liked him.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said, actually, Joe, about Darwin Núñez. Our colleague Paul Gorse, the Liverpool correspondent, said his only shot is the Hulk smash. So
we've already seen, he missed it.
Yeah.
But, like, we've already seen that Chimiti perhaps there's a little bit more in his locker than that, and that is a sign that offers some hope.
Yeah. Gav, I mean, like I said, he's obviously the second 6'4" Portuguese striker in the books, but he's certainly no like-for-like replacement for Beto, is he? He is a very different sort of player.
6'4"?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a young Gavin Buckland?
Yeah, I wish. I can only... that's his next stage of his development. He becomes second-choice striker, isn't he? After Calvert-Lewin or whoever, if Calvert-Lewin was there to overtake Beto in the running order for Everton. So that's his next stage for his development rather than being third. I don't think he's the same as Beto, isn't he? I think he's technically far more proficient. But at the same time, I think he's got Beto's sort of... I mean, he's quite quick, Beto, isn't he?
Mm.
But I like about Chimiti, he obviously has got a bit of intelligence about him. Even when he first came on, I can't remember his first substitution appearance this season, he made some good runs behind the defence. I think he saw that intelligence on Saturday. I think he's got a good touch in and around the area. Needless to say, just as good a touch as Calvert-Lewin. And I think what you find with him is, if he got a goal, I think that would be... I think that can be a big thing for a player that age coming into the team, particularly from abroad. If he got a goal, you'd see a difference. And even if Beto was fit or available for the last two or three games and Calvert-Lewin isn't available, I'd probably start. I think a Chimiti would definitely be worth...
You might learn more, wouldn't you?
I think it'd be good. Yeah. I think it'd be good if I'd play my head of Beto.
Yeah.
I think that would be good for his long-term development. But I saw enough in patches on Saturday after a difficult start. Where I think they just thought he was playing up to Calvert-Lewin, weren't they, on Saturday in the first half? Just lump it forward to the big centre-forward and take from there. But as you say, Chris, he's not that type of player, is he? At this stage of his development, he's not physically mature enough. No. Far better when we play on the floor and in around the box interface. I think he's far more comfortable with that.
Yeah.
And I think he had a decent start and, as Joe said, some good touches and some good signs for the future.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
The other age of the age, end of the age spectrum, Joe, the match winner, Idrissa Gueye, who's now enjoyed his most prolific Everton season, though, with his second goal of the week and a third of the season. I mean, one time people would have been wincing if he got that sort of chance in the box, but he took it with aplomb.
Yeah, he did. He did. I mean, he's had some week, Idrissa Gueye.
Yeah.
A week that probably just shows how important he can be to this Everton side. I thought it was quite fitting that he should get the winner, really. He got the goal against Nottingham Forest. You know, fair play. And then, you know, none of us expected that, but it bobbled in the end, didn't it? But I thought he was just the best player on the pitch against Liverpool. I thought he was a big part in winning that game for Everton, the way in which he hustled and harried McAllister, and they just couldn't handle him. Like, he was excellent in that game. So I was pleased for him that he got the moment to finish it all off at the end with that with that strike. He took it well, and he got the obviously we know that they get on very well. The Muslim contingent of Idrissa Gueye, Doucouré, Danjuma, and Onana are very, very close knit, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it's notable they celebrate the goals together.
Well, everyone got involved, to be fair.
Well, they did, but the start was over to Onana, and there's a nod to Danjuma with both his celebrations this week, because he's done Danjuma's snake celebration.
Yeah.
Which I think actually means that Idrissa Gueye has done Danjuma's goal celebration more times than
Danjuma
has forever. Yeah. So, you know, but yeah, no, I was really pleased. He deserved that moment. A lot of conversations now about whether or not the club should trigger the year they've got on his contract. I think, trying to work out where Everton they're going to be this summer is quite difficult, in the sense that we know that they're not going to have much money. So it probably depends on what terms they can get to agree to, because you'll be a high earner there and you'll be going into another year. And getting another year older and things like that. But obviously, in a midfield where, and we talked about this the other day, where you would expect Andre Gomes to probably be let go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You'd expect Dele to probably be let go. You would probably favour Onana to find a move this summer. All of a sudden you have a little look at, how much you might want to change things. There might be a squad that needs a big overhaul, but you probably want to keep on board a couple of players that have a bit of experience. Yeah. Certainly have an experience at Everton. Been through some of the relegation battles, because the next season might be difficult. And just be that steady in presence in the dressing room, because, again, it's not clear who will be there next season because obviously Ashley Young and Seamus Coleman are both out of contract at the end of this summer as well. So you don't want to lose too many of your your experienced professionals that know what it takes to get this club over the line. And Idrissa Gueye just did himself the world of good with that. And, I think, we're all grateful for it, because he has had a phenomenal week this week. And, fair play to him for it. It's been crucial.
Yeah. Gav, you and I, old enough to remember the likes of Barry Horn and Gareth Farrelly coming up, and amazing moments for them on the final day for Everton, but they just did it once. Like I said, Idrissa Gueye's done it twice in the space of 7 days, so it's not a fluke. I just wonder if maybe even at this advanced stage of his career, in his autumn years as a player, there could be more to come in this respect.
Yeah. Before we go on, let's talk about really seeing the goal celebrations. Remember Peter Beagrie's one, the somersault. I remember he scored at Goodison. I think that'd kill me. He scored, and somebody said to Howard Kendall afterwards, what do you think of Beagrie's goal celebrations? I don't know, I've not seen it before. With Pitley going on about his lack of goals. I think Garner Gueye, whatever he does now, he's made himself a little bit of a Goodison hero, hasn't he, in the last week? And if he leaves during the summer, it's not how you join an organisation. As they say, it's how you leave, and you go with all this fresh in the memory, won't he? I'm with Joe. I think the absences and departures elsewhere means that, if there is an option. And of course, we're assuming he wants to stay. You may not want to. I think it would be good to get him in on the basis of the stability side that we spoke about on Friday. Within that conversation, do you think Young could get another year, by the way?
Well, I mean, Dyche was very keen to name drop him and his professionalism, his experience in the post-match press conference, and to the kind of way that you think he might be edging toward. Like, he's gone out of his way to signpost the importance of Ashley Young to that squad. So I would anticipate that one of Young and Coleman would get a new contract.
Yeah.
And I imagine that the situation is probably it's Coleman's to lose, in the sense that what he is, I think said it back end of the last season or something like that, I think Coleman will get the choice. Coleman will get a bigger say in how and when and if he departs that club. But yeah, obviously someone who's done coaching badges and things like that. Obviously struggled with injuries again.
Young can put more positions up, Curly.
Yeah, he can do. I think what... answer a slightly different question to one you've asked, Gav. My hope would be with Coleman that there is a resolution in the next fortnight and that it's made public in the next fortnight, because I think that Coleman, if, say, for instance, whether it was a club decision or a personal decision, I imagine it'll be a decision that's taken and both would have a conversation rather than one say to the other. If it was, say, that Coleman didn't want to carry on at the club, I would hope that everybody would know that going into the final home game of the season against Sheffield United, so that he gets the send-off that he deserves.
I agree.
I know football isn't as, or often isn't, the kind of as sentimental as that. But I'm not speaking from a position of any insight here. I don't know what those conversations are going to be with Coleman or where his head is at. But I really think it would be a shame if, for instance, a decision was to be made where he didn't stay on at Everton as a player, and we found out after the final ball had been kicked at Goodison.
That happens with Tony Hibbert and Leon Osborne.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right, Joe, but I was going to say what you just said there, Gav.
Yeah.
Tony Hibbert, Leon Osborne, two stalwarts of the club. I think possibly even like a phone call after the season to finish, you're not being kept on. And I don't think he said it publicly, but I think Phil Jagielka was a bit peeved he never got a testimonial either.
Yeah, I think I don't want sentiment to be the sole defining, bit in terms of Young or Coleman. I think Young, for me, of the two, I'd rather have Young because I think he offers, flexibility. We talk about trust. I mean, him and Dice go back a long time. They go back for the Wofford days.
Yeah, teammates,
they go back like 20 years, don't they? So it's even longer than Dice's management days. So he's obviously a player Dice can trust as a consequence of that. And Young's another one. He's had a good week, hasn't he? After an incessant appearance against Forest. You know, he did well in the derby. Did well again on Saturday, because I think Mbueno's a difficult customer. And he would, for his versatility, he would be the better option, and plus he's probably going to be fit. But at the same time, I do think there's something needs to be done with Seamus. As Joe said, if it is going to happen, then make sure it's announced before the end of the season so we get a proper send off. I think it's maybe slightly different, because I think with Hibbert, Osman and Jagielka, there's still like quite a lot of old stalwarts still knocking around the team, like Tim Howard would still be there and so on. But Coleman's is the last sort of relic, isn't he? Relic's not the right word. He's the last symbol of the sort of Moyes here, isn't he? So it's a slightly different position he's in to the previous players who've gone. And I think fans see him as symbolising Everton far more than any other player. So he's probably got more justification for a send off, and that would be nice. And I wouldn't want sentiment to be the sole, the sole parameter in which to select either Coleman or Young. I'd have Young out of the two.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, just a slight deviation, Joe, because we've had a comment here from Ian Clark. I don't know, he's got his tongue in cheek here. He's put, play Keane up with Chimiti, Dan Juma left, McNeil in the middle, see how it goes, like Gomez to stay.
Fair enough.
Thoughts on that? Quite a few things to tackle in that statement.
Yeah, there are.
Big Keane up front for starters with Chimiti.
Well, I mean...
Don't go 4-4-2 against Luton again, whatever you do, surely.
I might find myself on the end of a beating here, but I can't for the life of me see McNeil in the middle.
A few people have suggested that.
I know this has become quite a common argument at the minute. I think it's baffling, because I think there's a player he's very, very one-footed.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to play in the middle of the pitch in the Premier League, to do so with only one foot, you're asking a hell of a lot from a player.
And he is one-footed.
He did all right at Fulham when he played in the middle. I think he reads the game well enough.
Yeah.
And it's been, the big story of last week was Idrissa Gueye the other big story, I think, was the reawakening of Dwight McNeil's left foot. Like, I don't know where that came from. Yeah. Like, but obviously scored a great goal against Forest. Yeah, it was his shot that Alisson put over the bar. His good shot from Alisson put over the bar for the corner Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored the header from.
Should have scored
Liverpool
in the second half, and it was 2-0, shouldn't he?
And then, but he also rattled the bar. I think it's still shaking in front of Gladys now. It's a tremendous hit. Yeah. You know, I think there's a danger of, you know, it's such a, when he's on form, it's such a wonderful sight to see Dwight McNeil cutting in off the right, or, you know, or the, well, just quite to see him centrally and unleash a shot, like, because he can strike a ball, can't he? Yeah, what they call paintbrush, I think they call him, don't they? And it's a brilliant one, but I just think that he's too one-footed to play in the middle. Well, maybe I'm wrong. I can understand why people are asking the question.
Yeah, I
get that. I mean, I think Matt Jones of this Palace said elsewhere. Also, he's looked good during games in the last week or so when he's been in that position, and that's because of the surprise value of moving inside. But actually, if you stay in the middle and people can mark you, it's a slightly different effect. I'd still like to see it. But I can fully understand the arguments of why you wouldn't do it, as Joe and Matt have said, as I say. It'd just be, it's got a bit of flair, and he's a match winner. And I think sometimes down that middle, I think it may give us an extra bit of an extra edge. And it would just be interesting to see. But at the same time, he's doing well at the moment, so why change it? Anything where you run three on this spin. Yeah, he's had an interesting season, McNeil, and when he hit that ball on Saturday, that was travelling, wasn't it, when it rattled the bar. Yeah. It was travelling. And he's another one who's had a good week, McNeil.
And then Michael Keane up top. I mean, it wasn't the first time he did it this season, Deitch. Yeah. I'd just written a piece, it'll probably go up online at some point this afternoon, saying that there have been times during this season, particularly during the 4 months without a win, when Sean Dyche has openly pondered at Finch Farm about putting Michael Keane up top. Yeah, when goals were such a struggle and there were injuries up front and Calvert-Lewin had gone months without scoring. I think that had there been a little bit less pressure, or had he had an opportunity to have done it and perhaps, you know, not faced a backlash if it had backfired, I think we might have actually seen it before. Yeah, it's commonly held that Keane, not even jokingly, but he's genuinely one of the best finishers we've seen ourselves, because of Palace, Tottenham Hotspur, he scored some great goals.
Burnley. Great finish. Yeah.
So, but obviously, I think that one of the best things that, one of the best signs that Everton have got this summer right will be if next season no one's talking about Michael Keane up front. And hopefully that will be the case, because obviously he's not a striker.
I was going to say, it doesn't happen so much, but again, I say you and I are old enough to. It used to happen quite a lot. I mean, we had Derek Mountfield in there. He was a striker as a youngster, and he'd talk regularly how, Everton be losing a game, how would he get, give him the sign, up you go, lad. And I remember player Paul Warhurst used to be good in both ends.
Well, he started as a defender and then became a striker.
Then Steve Walsh.
Another one. Yeah. Derek, I think his last goal at Everton was come on as a striker against Tottenham at the end of the season as a sub. Yeah, McKean, I sort of get that. It was in with the feel-good vibes, Keane coming on as a sub. The disappointing thing was he came on, I think, an injury time. He was stripped and getting ready to come on in about the 87th, 88th minute, wasn't he? Then he put him back on the bench. So to see him for 10 minutes would have been good. I think, say, Joe's right again. It's just a bit of a novelty value. It just felt right within, the weekend being. We could all have it. We all felt chilled out about it.
10 minutes was just fun, wasn't it? And like, how weird does that feel to have fun at Goodison Park in the back end of a season at the minute? Like, it just all... Just to hear all for it, though,
Okay. Another one, Chris, a former Everton player who became a striker and defender was Ian Marshall.
Of course.
After
Ipswich and Oldham.
Yeah, started here as a defender, then went to Oldham as a defender, ended up being a striker, a successful striker at both Oldham and Leicester.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, Joe, you've got a fan here. The Blues has said, I agree with Joe.
Thank you.
McNeil's touch on the half turn is too inconsistent, and so is the weight of his pass. Better as a wing back than a 10, in my opinion. Well, that's an interesting one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, no, like, yeah, it's That makes sense. We played wing back at the back end of last season, didn't we?
When we had
one wing back and Garner on the other side. Like, it just makes, again, that's the other thing. If you play him as a number 10, then he just loses defensive attributes as well. And
yeah,
I think those have been so crucial.
I mean, I think that's a fair point, because it's like when you become a number 10 and you've been coming from out wide, you don't just play as a winger in a number 10 position. You're asked to receive the ball with your back to goal a lot of the time, aren't you? And something, you know, let's face it, probably the best number 10 performance this season was Jack Harrison against Newcastle.
Yeah, we're both fans of that.
You know, and Jack, if you said as much to say about McNeely, I'd like to say Jack Harrison has got more of the attributes. He's got a lower centre of gravity, which is always handy.
Well, one of the best things about, for the first time in Sean Dyche's Everton career, and you know, go back to for the first side of my Everton writing career, Everton now got a few games where it doesn't really matter what happens. You know, genuinely pressure-free moments.
Well, it doesn't matter for them, but no, I was going to say the Luton game. You've got Forest and Burnley. I mean,
it matters for them, but Chris, we can't, like, you know, integrity of the league and all that. Mm. What Everton have to do is they have to put themselves first. And I think that the last three games, and obviously we want to try and finish as high as possible because it does have a financial impact. Of course it does. But really, this is the first opportunity that they have it for several years to actually experiment with that Everton side. There are many opportunities. There are many areas in which you can experiment.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, we know this summer is going to be very difficult. We know next season could well be hard. Mm-hmm. If there are any lessons that you can actually learn in the last three games this season might help you understand it for next season, then I think they should be followed through. And with that being the case, I'd consider playing Harrison behind the striker because, you know, I think there's a reasonable chance that Harrison is an Everton player next season.
Yeah.
I don't think Dan Juma is. So there isn't really any benefit to playing Dan Juma in the final games of the season, because unless it's covering injuries, give someone a rest or things like that, help out elsewhere in the team. Harrison, there is a chance a deal gets done.
Yeah.
And there is a chance Everton spend next season at moments when they're looking for a number 10. Why not have a game or a game or two where, in the same respect, give Chimiti opportunities? Mm-hmm. You know, why not try something a little bit different with Harrison and see? Because I think Harrison is on, I think he's had a good season. He's had a great season. I think there are reasons for that.
Like a lot of them, he's been up and down, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think particularly the stress has been put on these players and then their bodies. He started the season with an awful injury and has then had to play 90 minutes plus stoppage time every time he's been fit in a really difficult side. But, he's clearly a player that Dyche likes. He's clearly a player that works in the way that Dyche likes to play his football. And he's a player who might be difficult to replace for the same or cheaper.
Yeah.
If we can also unlock another position for him and discover some versatility there, let's try.
Yeah. Well, I know that time's ticking for Gav, but we've had a comment here. It's not from my good self. I've not got my phone here. Somebody's said to Ian Kroll, who's off camera, and he's already replied that he's like in our director role there, telling me to go closer to the mic, stuff like that. He's got from Humi UK, says, has anyone asked Ian Kroll? He still thinks the squad aren't playing for Dyche. And to be fair, Ian's been straight on there and replied, said, loads of people, mate. So it's been obviously a great week for Dyche and the vindication. Obviously, I've spoken about that. I got a lot of stick. I didn't just look to see which way the wind was blowing at a tough moment, you know, when rather than being a people pleaser or a politician, I said after the 6-0 defeat at Chelsea, he's always been the right man for Everton. And I think that if anybody thought that, you know, even in a difficult moment, if it was time to replace the manager, then I think that would be an irresponsible move. So given that Sean Dyche has now enjoyed his best week in the job, arguably, and vindicated getting Everton over the line with... But the amount of points now would be the same as the great Brighton and Hove Albion if it wasn't for the deduction. I think he deserves a lot of the credit.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think it's important to recognise that the strength of feeling in the aftermath of the Chelsea game, you know, I think a lot of that was justified. I think people were hurting and that was right. And I think that obviously, bearing in mind at that point, Everton, despite obviously 8 points of deduction, had gone, you know, 4 months with only one win in the Premier League, and that was, you know, that game against Burnley. and then had that humiliation against Chelsea. Like, I think it was a perfectly reasonable thing for people to question whether Sean Dyche was the right person. Obviously, it was a largely kind of pointless exercise. One, because there's no one at the club to sack him.
That was probably the big thing.
But also, you know, again, I don't disagree in the sense that getting rid of him at that moment and get rid of him now, I think, would probably be been a mistake, and that certainly looks like that would have been the case now. And yeah, we spoke about this last week, but there are people talking about his position going forward over the summer, and my belief is that the discussion over Sean Dyche's future is not does he get this summer, it's does he get the next summer. Is he the manager that takes Everton into Goodison, into the new stadium on the waterfront? That's where the discussion is, and we need to see what happens next season with takeovers and things like that first. But he's definitely given it. He's definitely earned the right to have the chance to do that, I think. Look, last week was phenomenal. It was beyond all our expectations. It was a perfect week for Dyche. He started it on the aftermath of the worst result of his managerial career. And like I said on here, going into that Nottingham Forest game, his personality did seem a lot different. He looked like he had taken knocks after that game. I think it had been a genuinely chastening week at Finch Farm in the aftermath of that match. And then by the end of the week, he's been wearing a tracksuit for three games in a row. He's got three wins, three clean sheets. He's written his name into Everton folklore by overseeing the first home derby win in 14 years. Mm-hmm. He's got one of his favourite bands, Green Day, all over him on social media. Yeah. Turns out after the game, he's in a music video for another of his favourite bands, The Blossoms. All of a sudden, he's gone from, a player who's taken some severe, a manager who's taken some severe knocks and is facing a really difficult, crucial days in a relegation battle, to someone that popular culture is trying to, tap into because they think he's a character that they can benefit from. It's a phenomenal week. Fair play to him. That's it. I think there was a clear sense of vindication from him when he came out after the result against Brentford. Clearly a lot of satisfaction, and it's hard to begrudge him that because, look, this season has been absolutely horrendous from an Everton perspective. The challenges that they face have been unprecedented. And, not only has he kept them up, but he's kept them up with an 8-point deduction.
Yeah.
And, you look at, you could take another 8 points off and they still wouldn't be in the relegation. It's just absolutely astonishing.
I mean, we've got two very winnable games coming up, haven't we? And we could have a gross points tally of 50 points this season, really? Couldn't we? Yeah. If you think about it, if we're on 44 so we could have 50 before we play Arsenal. And, that's what, 12 or 13 points more than the last two seasons?
The weaker squad.
With a weaker squad and all the turmoil, etc., blah, blah, blah. So that's a hell of an achievement, to be fair. Because I'm expecting points in the next two games, obviously. So that, and I said all along, haven't I? It'll be the time to judge this season is in two or three seasons' time, not now.
Yeah. I mean, Gav, if I come back to you then, so you can have your say on it. But I was just thinking, I've said this personally in a piece, say, oh, yeah, it was that a horrendous run. I'm not going to disregard that. It was record breaking for Everton in the Premier League, and they were tough times, of course, but I've said all along, I think personally he's the best fit for Everton since David Moyes. I've done my piece today, all those other managers that have come under Moshiri before him, I think there's a lot of football snobbery over Sean Dyche and the way he plays. Look at Burnley now. Isn't Vincent Kompany amazing? Well, he's the one still in the relegation fight and they spent a lot of money. So I think that, there's been a lot of debate about Dyche, but I think it's not the same as should Amadou Onana play or not. It's a very dangerous thing to talk about going for a ninth manager in 8 years. And of course, it was a poor result. And, there's been a massive swing over the last week. But I felt all along that's the reason I backed him, because I just think he's a good fit for Everton, especially in these difficult circumstances.
Yeah, but it goes back, if you've only won one, whatever it is, in 14 or 15, then any manager in the history of the game is going to be under scrutiny. Yeah. Their job's going to be questioned, isn't it? So that's perfectly acceptable position for fans, and I totally support that and understand it. I think the question was, I think, after Chelsea is whether, don't go now, but at the end of the season, I think there's a discussion. I think that is probably now being resolved, Joe, from what you're saying there. But actually, that discussion at the end of the season now null and void. It would appear, all things being equal, unless a new owner has some radical new ideas, You know, that dice will take us into next season, and just a case of taking it from there, isn't it, in terms of, you know, what happens after that. And I fully got all the angst about dice after the Chelsea game, and not just that, it's the, you know, the games before Chelsea. But, you know, it goes back to what I was saying before about it's not how you join an organisation, it's how you leave an organisation. Accounts and seasons are remembered for their end, aren't they, really? And it could be that actually this season, you know, if we get another couple of wins in the next two games, you can end in the season, even before Arsenal, with what, 6 or 7 wins in 7 or 8 games? And that's funny. It's a really, it's been a mad season for us in terms of sequences. What do we have? 7 games without a win? Was it the start of something like that? Then 7 or 8 wins in 11 to 12 games.
3 home wins till the end of March, yeah. And now 4 in April.
So we've had, it's going to be a season of 2 sequences of wins, isn't it? Of 7 or 8 in 11 games in the autumn, early winter, could end the season with another 7 or 8 wins in 11 games at the end. That will be our season, won't it? You know, with 2 winless runs either side of that. And the results are going to look a bit mad when you look at the list of results at the end of the season. But it's the points tally at the end, isn't it? It doesn't matter how you got them or when you got them, it's the points tally. And we've got 44 gross points at the moment, could end with 50. And that's going to be a hell of an achievement.
You're saying they can't win at the Emirates?
That's before Arsenal. I think you never know, do you? Well, it is Arteta's against Everton, possibly for the title that's just got. You know, it's just
we'll save that.
Right, that you save that one for another time. Not that we've got great memories of going to the Emirates or Arsenal on the last day of the season, have we? No. But I think the next two games definitely winnable, aren't they? And I don't think it's over. I think you can do a lot. We said before Saturday about the what we could do next couple of day games, maybe experiment, but we need to get as many points as possible because points mean prizes, don't they, as they always used to say. And if it means an extra, can we only go one place? Is that the most we can go up, is it?
Well, I think they're 4 points behind Palace at the minute. I think at the minute it's probably more a case of trying to stay ahead of Brentford, catch up Palace.
Yeah, but conceivably, you want to at least stay where we are. And possibly do catch Palace because it's worth, was it, £2.5-3 million?
Yeah, well, it'd be £6 million better off than last season.
Absolutely.
We are heading into a summer where, heading into a profit sustainability deadline where things look tight.
Should we talk about like the manager?
Having said that, I don't know when the payments come through. I don't know if they'll fall into this year or next year.
But if you say 2 places better off than last season, that's £5 million, not having sacked the manager. That's probably £7 million saved. About keeping the manager and getting them performing. That's with £12 million better off than what we were last season, which is effectively what the breach amount was. Yeah. So it's all very important for Dice to stay there for that reason, and also higher up the table we are, it's better off financially for us, and we benefit as a club. So we've got to keep going. Last 3 games, what I'm saying.
I'll just finish with a couple of comments that we've had on there. Ian Clark's been back on. He says, I remember Mick Lyons up front. Rydell played centre-back 1 game, was excellent. Keane, the new Andy Carroll. About that. And finally, from the Blues, I watched that music video with Dyche and thought he was AI at first. I'm not even joking. Well, don't know. Yeah. That's a good one to finish on, I think. So thank you anyway. I've been your host, Chris Bees. I've been joined by Joe Thomas, Gavin Buckland. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.